Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I am excited this year for a new theme and a new way of thinking about spirituality and spiritual resistance in the Holocaust. And the idea of looking at Holocaust literature through a spiritual lens is one which I think is going to be extremely rewarding and very exciting. But it's also still very challenging. In the introduction to the book that we're going to talk about today, the author of Blessed Memory describes that at one point her tape recorder that she used listening to the oral history accounts, her tape recorder fell off the desk and it broke. So she runs upstairs to tell her family, and her daughter, a prominent scholar herself, her name is Smadar, now she's known as Mrs. Professor Smadar Rosenzweig, says, "Mother, your tape recorder did not break. It simply jumped off your desk and committed suicide. How could you have expected your tape recorder to function till now? It never played a cheerful sound of music. It never recorded ordinary conversation. Even a machine can't bear it any longer." So in a certain sense, having done this for many years, we face a similar challenge that as much as we're going to give a new perspective and find new things, it also brings new sorrow and new difficulty and new emotional toll on a subject which is familiar to us. So we're going to do the best that we can with the help of God to create this meaningful journey. Now, when we think about literature and books, we can be reminded of an ancient teaching of the rabbis of the many holy books. You know, there are 24 holy books in the Torah canon. And the Talmud has a tradition that all the books are holy. But one is referred to as Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. It's Kodesh Kodashim, it's Holy of Holies. Of all the books in the biblical canon, Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, is called Kodesh Kodashim. It's Holy of Holies. And there are many reasons why, according to tradition, the book of the Song of Songs, which is a love song between the Jewish people and God, why that's called Holy of Holies. But certainly you can think about it in the fact that it is intimate, it's personal, it almost reveals an inner connection that transcends words. You almost feel like you're imposing on someone's personal conversation. And in many ways, lahavdil, so to speak, when we think about Holocaust literature, and there is, of course, a vast, vast library of Holocaust literature of every possible genre you could imagine, in many ways, we might suggest that this volume, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust by Yaffa Eliach, the first original Hasidic Tales in a Century, this book is like, it's like Shir HaShirim. It's like the Shir HaShirim of Holocaust literature. So, with that introduction, I will give what they would call in Hebrew a hisnatzlos hamachaber, the apology of the author. So I'm going to apologize for this class because I am totally unqualified. Who can approach a volume like this? Who can talk about and even grasp the stories that so many of you are familiar with from this book? You know that this book is mamish kodesh kadashim. You see the bare souls of Jews. You see the neshamas being depicted in these stories, in these pages. It's like the Shir HaShirim. And so, I don't know if anybody who, I'm sure there are some saintly people who are qualified to really grasp the Shir HaShirim, the soul of this book, the soul of the Jews, the Hasidic rabbis, and every man and every woman who are described in these stories. Heartbreaking, inspiring, unbelievable. So we're going to just give one short overview of a few perspectives that can help us appreciate a book that is just beyond the grasp of a human being. I want to start with a perspective that is introduced by the Talmudic sages. It's quoted in a collection of teachings from rabbis that you're talking about is nearly 2,000 years old. It appears on your page in the first source. Dorshei Rishumos Omrim. The translations here are coming from Sfaria, which is a very wonderful website if you ever want to use it for a Jewish text. They often have English translations that they provide. Dorshei Rishumos, those who write down notes, they would say, Dorshei Rishumos Omrim. Ritzon Chashetakir Misha Amar Vahaya Ha'olam. If you would like to become acquainted, Lahakir means to become acquainted, with Misha Amar, the one who said, Vahaya Ha'olam, and there was the world, meaning if you want to meet God, if you want to become acquainted with God, Lamod Haggadah. Learn Haggadah. We'll have to define that in a minute. Learn Haggadah. Shemitoch kach, through that, ata makir es HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you become acquainted with God, umedabek bedrachav, and you cleave to the ways of God. You want to encounter God, you want to become acquainted with God, learn Haggadah. What is Haggadah? What is Haggadah? What does that mean?
Stories.
Okay, stories,
tales,
great. So if we think about it, the truth is I should have gotten the whiteboard for today. If we imagine, let's pretend that we have the whiteboard right here. We can draw a line right down the middle of the whiteboard and put two columns when it comes to Jewish scholarship. This is true for biblical scholarship. It is also true for rabbinic scholarship, both Talmudic and Midrashic. There are two categories that we can talk about. We could talk about the legal side of the equation. We'll put that on the left side. And then we could talk about the narrative side of the equation, which we'll put on the right side. The chelek, the portion that we could call the chukim, the laws, or halacha, the way you behave in your path of life. And then there is the narrative story, the chelek ha'agada. There's halacha, there's what you do, and there's agada. There's the story that goes along with it.
Are they on the same level?
Yes. So Rav Kook has, and there's a lot more to say about this, which is not for us for today. Rav Kook has a selection of pieces, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, in the Oros HaKodesh, where he talks about the importance of joining these. He highlights the fact that when Hashem gave us the Chumash is not exclusively, for sure, but it is not even primarily, it is not a book of laws. You don't get the first law in Chumash until the third Torah reading in the second book. Rashi points out, the famous biblical commentary, the first, right off the bat, the first Rashi, first page in Chumash, is that if this was a book of laws, we would have scrapped the whole first book. Because the first book is a book of stories. There is a synthesis. There is a weaving together of two different elements in Chumash. There are legal elements, the left side, the chukim, the laws, and then there are the stories. Parshas Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis, that whole section, it's all stories. Then you get to Shmos, it's like mostly stories and some laws. Vayikra is mostly laws, and Bamidbar is, I guess, mostly stories, and then Devarim is a little bit different in its character in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu is kind of giving us his final thoughts. It's a review with a specific frame that Moshe wants us to have. But the whole Torah is its stories and its laws. It's not one or the other. If you look in the Talmud, some of you are familiar with Talmud, some of you have relatives who are learning Talmud every day, so you can ask, and you will find out, that the Talmud is not just a legal book. Much of Talmudic discussion is Haggadah. Right? We talk about this idea of Magid. It's a saying over. Haggadah and Agadata, these are the parts that are narratives. They are stories. So in the rabbi's tradition, in the Gemara, so you'll have all kinds of stories. You'll have imaginary stories, mishalim, parables. You'll have anecdotes about people, stories that happen to people, all kinds of things. But these are both part of a tradition. What's the difference between the normative law section, the chelek on the left side of halacha and agada? Well, they obviously differ in many ways. They differ in their character. So whereas the law is primarily objective, the narrative is deliberately, intentionally subjective. Whereas the law on the left side is very literal. There's obviously a spirit of the law also, but it's primarily the letter of the law. The right side, it's all the spirit. The words are just a way, the story is just a way of conveying the inner meaning, the inner soul. It's like you could compare the body to the soul, the legal code to the halacha, to the agada. Or, this was a great line from Shai Agnon about stories, that I'm not going to convey the language as it was, but I'm going to convey the ideas and the intentions. Shai Agnon was, I don't know, maybe the greatest Jewish storyteller of the last century, right? Nobel Prize winning author. He says, I'm going to share the ideas and the intention, but not the language. Because he was trying to convey stories, especially from his European youth, in a new modern Israeli society. What year did he die? 1970? I don't know, something like that. Late 60s, early 70s, I think. Mm-hmm. Right? He grew up in Buchach. He grew up in Europe. And he was a storyteller par excellence, one of the greatest storytellers of all time. And he says that his stories, they're not conveying the language. They're not conveying the scientific information. That's for a legal code. The story is meant to convey the ideas, the intentions. It's the difference between the vessel and the contents, the body and the soul. Halacha is very measurable. Narrative is not measurable. It's a totally different body of work. This is maybe why this medrash wants us to know, Ritzoncha shetakir misha amar v'hoy olam. If you want to encounter God, it's true that there is a way to encounter God through a system of law, but that's much more circumscript. If you want a direct lahakir, yakir means that you have a clear recognition of something. The Gemara uses this in Bava Metzia when it comes to lost objects. Can you identify this? Can you look it in the eyes and identify it? That is what the Medrash is using, that term. Can you identify God? Where do you see God? You see God through the stories. You become connected with godliness. And that's why it says, Umedabik bedrachav. You want to feel like you're attached to godliness? Medabik bedrachav? Study the stories. Learn agada. So I think this is the first frame of understanding why this book, Chassidic Tales of the Holocaust, is so valuable, because it's precisely that. It's a book of stories. It's not a list of figures or places or dates or numbers, right? It's a book of stories. Ritzoncha shetakir, you want to be makir, you want to see with your eyes, umedabik bedrachav, and feel connected to the people who underwent this terrible calamity, this catastrophe called the Holocaust. Lamod agada, read the stories. Yeah.
So when I was published, right, there was a kind of
debate. She was definitely at the forefront of this whole movement of telling it through the survivors' ends and the stories. I think she was even on a presidential commission, I think from Carter.
Carter. 77.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
She was very, at the forefront of this. Yes. Yeah. So I think this is an important distinction. So that halacha, like we said, on the left side of the equation is objective, as opposed to the agada on the right side is subjective because it relates to the person's personal experience. So We need both of these, to your point from before. Of course you need a rigid, fixed system of expectations and laws. That's necessary. But within that, what breathes the life into it? Where do you encounter God? Through the stories. So now, is it a surprise then? What did the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, in this infinite document that we call the Torah, what did it start with? Did it start with laws? Nope. It started with stories. And when the rabbis said, okay, we're going to give you one night that you're going to try to encapsulate all of Judaism and pass it on to the future generations, what did they tell us to do? Did they tell us, you know, give somebody a book with a lot of statistics? That's
teach
it.
The children.
How do you teach the children?
Through stories.
Through stories. It's the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So you need both, but it's dafka, the subjective element, that creates the connection. And maybe that's why, ready for this? The word Haggadah or Agada comes from the word Gid. What is a Gid? Like Gid Hanashe? What is a Gid?
I don't know the word.
Gid is a tendon. A tendon or a sinew in an animal. What does that do? I think. That's right. It connects, I believe, the muscles and the bones. So Agada is what creates connections, because it's the affect. Haggadah, the night of the Seder, it's Miloshon Gid, the Hasidim say. It's like a tendon that connects two things. The story creates that connection. And even though, as Elie Wiesel said, I'm not going to tell you the same language, but I'm going to give you the ideas and the intentions. And we need both. We need historians of the Holocaust who are going to, they're going to document exactly how many people and exactly how to spell the name of that town and exactly how to pronounce the particular place in which this and this happened. We need that. That's important. But we also need the soul. We need the personal stories, the subjective elements, which, as we all know, memory sometimes is tricky. Maybe the German who was standing there, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, maybe he wasn't tall, maybe he was short. But does it matter for the story? It matters for the halacha, whether this is in this place or in that place. It's tall or it's short. But in the story, it doesn't matter. I'm going to tell you something that you're going to maybe consider heretical, but it's okay. It's okay. You ready for this?
Yeah.
We're going to be preparing now for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Probably one of the most emotional highlights of the whole service is the Nirsana Tokef passage, which is a liturgical poem. Nirsana Tokef. It's a piece of text. It's not from the original Siddur, right? It doesn't go back 2,000 years. It goes back whatever 800 years, 900 years. So in the bottom of the Art Scroll Machzor, or the Machzor that you have usually, they tell you the story of how this Nirsana Tokef, this passage, this liturgical piece, how it came to be. So there's a tradition that there was a man, his name is Rav Amnon of Mainz. Some of you are familiar with the story, that, right? Do you want to tell them?
Nope.
I have to do it? Okay, I have to do all the work here. No help. So the story goes that he was asked by the local bishop if he would convert. Of course, this is a common theme, especially in the time of the Crusades period. Would he convert? He says, give me 3 days to think about it. And he has charat, he has remorse that he even considered converting. So he sends a message after 3 days. I'm sorry, it was a big mistake. I shouldn't have ever considered this in the first place. So the local bishop, he cuts off his fingers, he cuts off all of his appendages, he cuts off his, you know, the whole thing. They bring him in a box to the ark, the high holy days, and he says to sanctify the name of God, he teaches this Nechal Nesana Kedusha. That's the introduction to the Kedusha. This is like a thumbnail sketch of this famous legend, right? That's the famous, I shouldn't say legend.
Who cut whose limbs?
The bishop cut off the limbs of the rabbi. He says, you know, this punishment that you... Okay, fine.
Right.
This is the whole story. You read it in the bottom Machzor. You always have a chance to read it every year. I highly recommend it. Okay. However, it is very, it's very timely. However, if you do some digging, you will find that it is difficult to ascertain evidence, historical evidence, of a Rabbi Amnon of Mainz. And trying to figure out who exactly is the protagonist of the story and where it happened and when it happened becomes very elusive. Now, I'm not going to tell you what to believe or what to think, but I will tell you that in my mind, it doesn't matter. This section in the davening is meant to evoke a certain emotion. This passage of Nisana Tokef, maybe it's written 800 years ago after a story of Rav Amnon of Mainz, or maybe it's actually much older, from 2,000 years ago, but it was only picked up in the Middle Ages because Jews, whether their names were Rav Amnon, or it was Rav Clonimus, or it was Rav Yehuda, which are traditional names in Ashkenazi communities in the times of the Rishonim, whoever the name was, there were thousands of people who were slaughtered by Christians because of their Jewish identity. So it could be that over time, these different episodes coalesced around one story. Now, this story cannot fit into the historical veracity of Halacha. It doesn't fit in there. The same way that many of the stories of the Talmud says in Bava Basra, a list of stories that happened to a man by the name of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, that are the most fanciful, imaginative stories, that he was traveling by ship and he ended up marooned on an island that turned out was actually the back of a whale, and he set up a fire on this island and then the whale woke up. Like, unbelievable fanciful stories. Does the Gemara ever think that that story ever happened? No, the Gemara is trying to tell you a message, and it conveys that message through a story. The same way that Rabbi Nachman, at the end of his life, decided that the way that he was going to get through to his disciples, it didn't work teaching them the traditional way. He had to tell them stories. So a story is not necessarily meant to be a scientific vehicle. It's not meant necessarily to tell you this is a fact. It's meant to tell you this is a feeling. So it could be that the story of Rav Amnon of Mainz, it could be that it actually never happened.
That's different than stories that you're reading in like the Hesiod Tales, because we're assuming that those are true.
Right. So we're definitely assuming that they're true, but the reason why I'm bringing this up is because they're true to the extent that the person retelling them, right, categorizes them based on their memory of what exactly happened. Now, she says in the introduction that she flew thousands of miles to confirm that this happened, but like the story of the child with the pocket knife, whose mother took the pocket knife from the German and gave it a bris milah and then gave it to the German, that story is definitely true, whether or not she looked him in the eye, she stood sideways, how the bundle was, right, how she remembers it, the exact details. So I'm using the story of Rav Amnon of Mainz as somewhat of a dramatization, because it could be that that particular actual episode may not be true, as opposed to these, where the people actually remember and verify that these happened to them, or, right, she either heard these firsthand, but whenever you're talking about someone's memory, it's not the same thing as, right, an oral history is not the same thing as a scientific research paper. Right. But my point is that that's okay. Because if you confuse the two, if you confuse history and memory, then you start to say, oh, well, this has no value anymore because it doesn't stand up to the historical. But what we're saying is that these are two different realms. So there's the realm of halacha, and then there's the realm of agada. The realm of halacha has to stand up to the same intellectual rigors of any other discipline, Whereas the realm of agada, it has its own rules. So some agadas, some stories are meant to be allegories, and they're purely fictional. Some of the stories that Rabbi Nachman tells are actually, you know, Ukrainian folk tales that he retold to convey a message. Some of the stories that we read, like the story of Rav Amnon of Mainz, may be an amalgamation of different stories that took on one new theme. I'll give you another example of this. There was a woman, it's a whole long story. A friend of mine went to Morocco this summer. Her name is Hatuel. There are like 15 different ways of describing this story of this woman, this tzedekis, this righteous woman, who instead of being married to some local, forced to marry to some local Arab guy, she would rather be killed. And there's a picture of her grave. So there are lots of different ways that this story goes down. You can't scientifically prove which one of these stories is true and how exactly, but the story, the narrative of this woman and the story of her sacrifice, right, that's symptomatic or emblematic of what her life was about. Exactly the details is not really important, and what other people did at the same time. So now you bring it back to this, where you're talking about people who actually lived these experiences and remembered them. So even if you're going to tell me, well, can he remember it exactly 40 years later? So sometimes you're going to say, yes, he can. And sometimes memory is sharp and just as much valid from a scientific side as any other metric of science. But even if it's not, even if it's not, even if, as Shai Agnon says, it's not about the language, it's about the ideas and the intentions. Now, in this book, it happens to be that you're talking about people who experience these things firsthand. They saw them. So there is, of course, much more veracity in terms of the actual story that happened. But to me, it's not really about going back to research what was the name of the town, what was the name of the camp. Okay, they did do that, but that's not the point. Does it matter whether it was in Janowska, this story, or in Mauthausen? Does it really matter? It matters for the side of halacha, for history. History, it matters where it happened. But from the story side doesn't matter whether it happened in Janowska or it happened in Mauthausen. It matters that it happened and that story is being retold. So I think this is the first observation that I would like to make about this book. And that is that the world of stories give us something. And even if they don't always necessarily live up to the scrutiny of scientific inquiry, it doesn't matter. Now, it's important to know that sometimes you're going to find stories that are presented as fact, which are actually not factual. And then that becomes a problem, because if they're being presented as something that happened and it didn't happen, then that's a challenge. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go to a Tisha B'Av experience with Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb. He was the rabbi at that time of Shomrei Emunah in Baltimore. I was in high school, and I used to go there to Shomrei either for bar mitzvahs, a friend of mine, or for Tisha B'Av. That was how I learned to experience Tisha B'Av with Rabbi Weinreb. It's amazing. I still remember that Rabbi Weinreb told a story. So now you're talking, okay, I'm still a young person. I'm only 41, but this is now almost 30 years ago. I still remember he told a story. I was sitting on the floor in Shomrei Emunah. He told a story, a Holocaust story, of a child who was so starving, who had sucked the flesh off of his fingers and the bones were like popsicle sticks. Mm. I remember that story. Years later, I reached out to Rabbi Weinreb. I sent him an email. I said, do you remember this story that you told many years ago? He wrote me back. He said, you should know the memoir that was the book in which I found that story turns out to have been discredited.
What?
Discredited. Yeah. It didn't happen. Now, my takeaway from that is that if that story had been presented as an allegory or something that could have happened or something that was dramatized, that's one thing. The problem with that case was that there was somebody who was writing a memoir of something that didn't really happen. So it is complicated.
Well, it's also that we deal with Holocaust deniers, and all you need is a story that's not a real.
And then all of a sudden,
you've
opened up a can of worms.
But a lot of what is being
exactly
now, because the Holocaust is selling so well, is that.
Yeah, so that's also a whole other can of worms in terms of historical fiction.
I just had a college student who read that book, and
which book?
This book, The Hasidic Tales.
Yes.
And he called me and he's like, are these stories true? They
yes.
seem almost unbelievable.
Right.
And I kind of answered the way you answered, but that's problematic if you're reading something for historical
right, exactly.
knowledge. So you have to make sure that that's not the hat that you're wearing when you're reading
it. Bidiyuk, which is why we always are careful to distinguish, let's say, as Talmudic students, between what is halacha, when the Talmud is speaking wearing a legal hat, and when is agada, when the Talmud is wearing a homiletic hat. So here too, you, and whenever we go through these things, but like I remember recently, I don't remember how long ago it was now, you probably remember, there was a big tararam about that book, The Tattooist of Auschwitz.
Yes.
It was a huge tararam about that book. Is that historical? Is it historical fiction? She writes on the front, it's a novel, but it's based on interviews. Like, and it gets tricky and it becomes problematic when people start, you know, with the Holocaust deniers, they say it never happened. But the reason that all of this matters to us, and maybe I'm spending too much time on this point, is that knowing the difference between the halacha and the agada is important. And knowing the value, the necessity for the agadic side of it is crucial for appreciating the connection to that event. Ritzon chashitakir. That's number one. Okay, we can spend a lot more time. I'm so over time already.
It's okay.
This is a disaster.
This is it.
Okay, good. Let's go. Can we come back to it later at the end? Because I'm never going to finish everything, but okay, a little more. Take a look at this next medrash. Many of you are familiar with one part of this medrash, this rabbinic teaching. This is point number two. Many of you are familiar with this medrash, this teaching. Rabbi Akiva says, what is the great principle of Torah? Rabbi Akiva says, "Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, ze klal gadol b'Torah." Right? You're familiar with this idea that love your neighbor, your friend, like yourself. That's a great principle in Judaism. What is not so known is the next line in the Medrash, which you have on your page. Ben Azai, one of the great Mishnaic teachers, said, "Ze sefer toldos Adam." This is the book of the generations or the actions of man. Ze klal gadol b'Torah. That is a great principle in Torah. Not so famous. But what is Ben Azai saying? Ben Azai is saying, telling the stories of people, that is an important principle. Ze klal gadol b'Torah. It's not just the Sefer told us to Adam in general, that there is a book, the Medrash describes, of the entire history that God wrote, so to speak, and knows from the beginning of mankind until the end of mankind. Ze Sefer told us Adam. That's one thing. But homiletically, the way to interpret this Medrash is Ze Klal Gadol B'Torah. You know what's really important in Torah? The story of every person. The Sefer told us Adam. The story of a person's life. That is valuable. That we're not just speaking in generalities. You know, there was a Holocaust. There was a city of Krakow. No. Ze Sefer told us Adam. This is the name of that person. This is where they were born. This is what they were like. This is what they experienced. This is how they reacted. These are the things that they did. This is what they taught their children. Right? Ze Sefer told us Adam. And in that respect, there can never be enough Sfarim to be written about these Jews. The Jews who were lost, the Jews who survived. Ze Sefer told us Adam. Ben Azai wants you to know, Ze Klal Gadol B'Torah. Because every human being has infinite worth. Every person's story is worth telling. Ze Sefer told us Adam. Ze Klal Gadol. That's number two. Number three, and I'm shortening it because it's going to be very long. And I want to not drag it out too much. But take a look at this piece. I find this fascinating. Really, really interesting. I love this book. There is a book, Etymological Dictionary of Biblical Hebrew. So you're thinking to yourself, I cannot imagine a volume that is more boring than this. Etymological Dictionary of Biblical Hebrew, based on the commentaries of Samson Raphael Hirsch. So this book is awesome. I'll tell you why it's awesome. This book is awesome because it breathes creativity into your thinking. One of the interesting things that Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, one of the great 19th century commentaries, did was that as he wrote his commentary on the Chumash, he identified shorashim, root words, and found their relatives. And he uses that to explain lots of things. So what this guy, I forget the name of him, is, I have the book at home now. What he did was, he collected all of these places where Rabbi Hirsch identifies the root of a word in Hebrew and their associated meanings. And this, I find, is mind-blowing. Because what you start to realize when you explore this is how much creative opportunity there is to study, to teach, to learn in these different concepts because they're multi-layered. So take a look at this entry and you'll see what I mean. The word sefer. What does the word sefer mean in Hebrew? A book. We just said zeh sefer toldos Adam. The word sefer also is related to the word sipur. What is a sipur? A story. So now you go even further. So, the first meaning, samach peresh, is telling, reciting past events. So the pasuk says, vayesaper saramashkim, the winemaker, he told over what happened. Number two, lisaper is related to lispor. What is lispor?
To count.
Totaling. Shiva shavuos tisporlach. It also means, number three, to declare. Asapra shimcha. It also means, number four, to recount ideas. It refers to, number five, what is a sofer? A scribe. Not just somebody who tells. But a sofer is a scribe, a sofer stam. It is a sefer, a book, a collection of ideas. It is also related to the word sapir. What does the word sapir mean? Sounds like an English word that you know. Yes. Sapphire. A gem. A gem. A precious gem is called a sapir. For example, one of the, you know, the Kohen Gadol, he had a plate that had 12 stones on it. One stone was called a sapir. It's a precious stone.
Do you think Eliezer Ben Yehuda read his book?
Eliezer Ben Yehuda definitely knew a lot of this. He for sure did, with all his little papers. It's also related, now you extend it further, samach Pei Reish, I'm sorry, I got a little covered over by the cam scanner, is related to the word Tzadi Bei Reish, which is to collect. Or Samach Pei Reish could be read similar to Sin Pei Reish, which is Shvar, to harmonize. Or Shvar in Aramaic is beautiful. Like Shvar Arag Nichsin in a wedding document in Iksuba. The husband has to commit to paying top dollar. So Shvar Arag Nichsin has to be beautiful. But it's also related to Shever, to break, or Safar, to cover, or to compress, or to separate, or to examine. You see how all of these different etymological roots somehow are in the same constellation. How... Oh, so what Rav Hirsch is pointing out is that in Hebrew, letters are related to each other. So what he wants you to see is that the word shever is related to the word sefer. It's not first degree relative, it's like a second or third degree. So that's what this book is doing. This guy went over through all the commentaries of Rav Hirsch on Tanakh. It's an amazing thing, right? So, but now it's like, wow, stories. We're talking about stories. Well, stories now have so many layers. There is the scribe, the sofer, who wrote it. There is the sipur. There is the dimension of sapir, that it's a precious gem. That it is a sabar. It's like a confluence. It's a collection of individual memories or facts or fragments that are put together to tell the story. That are woven. It's cumulative. There's this sabar. All these meanings of the word samach pei reish, they're all part of the concept of a story.
More than cumulative, it makes relationships, means that things are not isolated.
Yes, that's part of the idea of harmonizing. A harmony is when you layer on something to a melody that enhances it, that fits. When I saw this, I was like, This is amazing. I could leave this at this table, and you could just unpack this for an hour.
Then there was no way of replicating the voice, the incident, the writings, the event.
Right.
Now, well, your phone, you can replicate. There's a distinction. There's a hard-nosed way of saying that the creativity of the individual, just as you're saying on the right and the left, adds to the subject matter without compromising.
So that's the element of the personal, the subjective.
Right.
And that's why there's an element of Vayisaper Sarhamashkim. This was how the Sarhamashkim told the story. The other people would have told the story differently, but this was his perspective. So I think this element of understanding that when we talk about stories, that it has many different layers, that the story is, it's a combination of things, right? A good storyteller is able to weave together different elements. It has to do with declaring something, writing something, unifying, compressing, right? You're compressing a whole world into just a short amount, and that a story is precious. I think that's a third level of what we think about when we think about these tales. Each one of these tales is precious. It's like a gem. It's also bringing together different motifs, different themes. This book of stories, it has four sections, but it's really trying to bring together all these different elements when we think about stories, and specifically stories from the Holocaust, of course. And then it's almost like a puzzle. And then there's the last piece, which I wanted to bring out, and with this we'll wrap up. This brings us both to Chassidus, but to the reason why we get together every month in the first place, and the whole notion of spiritual resistance. She writes in the foreword, "These tales are not merely the personal stories of a particular Hasidic rabbi or individual Hasidim. Because of the conditions that gave birth to them, they assume the dimension of moral and social reflections and commentary. At a time when human beings were stripped naked of everything, even of their names, the only resource remaining to them was their inner spiritual strength."
Can you repeat moral and...
"This was the very essence of their existence, and it is the tales, it is this that the tales record." I'll say it again. "At a time when human beings were stripped naked of everything, even of their names, the only resource remaining to them was their inner spiritual strength." What's that?
It's part of our tour.
Oh.
How we introduce spiritual resistance.
Awesome. Okay. You got this quote. Forget it. You didn't need that. But why is this specifically important, I think, as it relates to this book? Because what is Hasidism? Okay. Go back to the word Kodesh Kodashim. Like, you're talking about an entire world, an ecosystem, a lifestyle. There are many ways to describe Hasidism. One core element of Hasidism has to do with closeness to God. The concept of immanence, immanence with an A. Mm-hmm. Immanence means the presence of godliness in every circumstance. So the presence of godliness in inanimate objects, the presence of godliness in a person's pedestrian part of their life, and the immanence of God even in the worst catastrophic experiences. The omnipresence of God. This is a mainstay of Hasidic thought. So now we go back to where we started. What did the Medrash say? Ritzoncha shetakir, if you want to see God, lamod agada. Learn agada. So one of the things that Yaffa Eliach points out, and many others do, is that what is a major introduction to the world of Jewish life from Hasidim are stories. Starting with Rabbi Yisrael the Baal Shem, the founder of the Hasidic movement, we introduce the role of stories. And it's not coincidental, because in the world of Hasidim, what are we focused on? We're not as much focused on Talmudic study for the sake of Talmudic study. We're focused on a person's personal encounter with godliness. Where is God in my life?
But the Mitnagdim would be not accepting this idea.
The Mitnagdim were not interested in this. They're not interested in telling stories. They're interested in studying Talmud. It's fine. Not criticizing. Now I understand why this title puts it all together. Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. The first original Hasidic tales in the century. It's the notion that we are telling stories as an expression of the tradition of Hasidus. So much of Hasidus is about telling stories because it's about feeling the presence of God. And that's what you can come back to when a person, God forbid, is faced with lo aleinu, we should never know from such a thing. This level, when a person is stripped of everything, what's the only resource remaining to them? Their inner spiritual strength. Their mishatakir. The recognition that there was godliness still within them. That God still existed for them. They could still hold on to that. How do you convey that? Through stories. If you want to convey mishatakir, you want to see godliness. You want to connect to godliness. You want to talk about spiritual resistance. You could argue there's only one way to do it. It's through telling stories. It's through Hasidic tales. And that's one of the most phenomenal and amazing dimensions of this book. It's carrying on the Hasidic tradition of telling stories and leaning into this core Hasidic principle of experiencing godliness. Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. It's just like, it's a singular type of book. That's why it's Kodesh Kodashim. Right? It's not a historical record. It's a book of Haggadah. It's trying to get a person to find their own connection to godliness by learning the story. Right? Why did Hasidim tell stories? Because through that story, the listener was able to develop and nurture their own connection to godliness. Hasidus was not, there's more time for this, not for today. In the back, there's an amazing book of Hasidic stories called Nacha Stories by Dr. Abraham J. Tversky. And in the back, he has an epilogue where he says, so what is Hasidus? So he points out that Hasidus is not some kind of new religion. It's just a new way of emphasizing themes that already existed for thousands of years. So it's going to be placing a new emphasis on the stories that already are told in the Chumash and in the Gemara, but now we're going to retell them in a new way. It's placing an emphasis on people feeling connected to tradition, feeling connected to prayer in a new way, feeling connected to song in a new way, to meditation. It's going to democratize people's connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam, with God. And one of the chief ways to do that, that is wholly democratic, that everybody can relate to, are stories. Stories. These are things that many of us relate to in so many ways in our religious and spiritual lives, and that is what this is about. Right? This is really, it's a spiritual book. That's what it is. It's a sefer. It's a sefer told us Adam, it's a stories of people that's documented, that's authentic. So it's a sefer told us Adam, but it's also the sefer of Ritzon Chashitaka Misharim Volum. You want to meet God? Meet Rabbi Spira in this book. And the people who he encountered. Right? And Dafka did not want to take the time today to tell the stories because, you know, if I told one story, it would take like 35 minutes. So it would not. But like, the people that Rabbi Spira met, right? The mother who sacrificed her child with the circumcision before he was going to be killed. Or the holding on to the coattails. Or the first story in the book. Or the image of this man who is totally anti-religious, who took a bullet and died on the floor in a pool of blood because it was Yom Kippur. Shnivais. You want to meet godliness? You want to see spiritual resistance? You want to see spiritual heroism? You want to see godliness in this world? Just read these stories. It's mamish, it's Kodesh Kadashim. That's really what it is. So I hope that today, and I'll ask for everybody's thoughts on this because you all tell these stories, but I hope we didn't do a disservice to the memory of Yaffa Eliach, and we hopefully, you know, it's impossible to really capture this book, But hopefully we can realize how this book fits into a Jewish tradition of storytelling that starts with when God told the first story, till when the Baal Shem Tov started telling stories, to this book of stories. And how important this world of stories is in the world of Jewish literature, and of course in our appreciation of Holocaust literature.